If it's that time on your dial, you already know who it is on the show. Hey, John Browner, Jason Lawhead, the ESPN Mitre 1090 ESPN. I don't want to make Bill Hagen mad. It's John Browner. It's Jason Lawhead. It's the Browner and Lawhead show coming to you from 6 to 7 p.m. Monday through Wednesday. It's our hour to kind of catch you up on our view of what we think happened in sports during the day. Because like we say all the time, by the time you've made it to us, you pretty much made up your mind on everything you want to do. So we're here to have fun. What's going on, Jason?
It's our hour, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the way it is.
There you go. It's the Browner Lawhead hour. That's how we should spell it. A-O-U-R.
That's
the
right.
Browner Lawhead hour. Because, yeah, it's just kind of one of those things that if you're on the dial, listen to it us live on ESPN 1090. That's awesome, man. That's great. I've had some friends actually be in the car and will record like on their phone the car while we're going on and then text that to me. And I've put up a few things. So that's cool. And then, on the YouTube page, if you're joining us live when it streams or you're picking it up later, we're having a good time, man. This is, we make the most of this hour. Everybody I've talked to that, you know, I've got some friends back in the Northeast Ohio area and some families that'll dive into the YouTube, even if it's, a few days late or a couple of days late. And they're talking about how much fun they have just watching us banter for an hour. So hopefully you're there live right now or watching us sometime and having that much fun too. Because you and I, even after the show's over, we talk for another 10 or 15 minutes and yuck it up and have a good time. And hopefully everybody else is enjoying it.
If you're catching up late, you can always do that on the podcast at the iTunes Podcast Store under Kaplan and Crew. Or you can always head over to YouTube and see the faces and kind of see the images in which we project. Man down. The images in which we project on YouTube. Kaplan and Crew.
You go to YouTube, you can see me kick my camera and knock it off the mount. Oh, boy. All right.
Like, share, subscribe. Look, I don't know if there are too many people who like sharing and subscribing the game that they saw last night, because where do I even start with this game? If you're a Rams fan, you're happy, but when you win like that, that's a cautious happy. If you're a Cardinals fan, because I'll start with the Cardinals side of it, and you can pick it up on the Rams side, because you thought the Rams would win. I thought the Cardinals would win. So I'm going to cover what I think I saw, and you can cover what you think you saw from a winning perspective. I don't know if it's time for Cliff Kingsbury to go, but if I'm in the front office for the Arizona Cardinals, I'm having that conversation. If I'm in charge of what happens next, there are way too many good coaching candidates available in this particular part of this cycle. And I think we can get one better than him. At some point in time, Doug Collins was great. Phil Jackson made Michael Jordan and took him to another atmosphere. Kobe Bryant was always great. Phil Jackson came in, took it to another level. I'm not saying Cliff Kingsbury is Doug Collins, but I think you've gotten all you can get out of the Cliff Kingsbury offense. I think you've gotten all you can get out of the human, out of the man, Cliff Kingsbury. He shoots his load far too early in the season. And that's what happened again. They sputtered at the end. And you can say it was because of injuries. You can say it, this isn't that. Last night's game plan called for Kyler Murray to not run. Did it also call for them to not try to stop the run before it got 4 yards? Of gain. There was a lot of things about last night's game from the Cardinals side of the field. If I'm a fan of the Arizona Cardinals, that I am pissed about, because I really feel like they did not come to play and that should not happen in a playoff game, in Kyler Murray's first game and Cliff Kingsbury's first game. Nervous energy, I expect. That's what you got in the first quarter. After that, after the first two possessions, it was still terrible. So I don't know. What did you see from a Rams perspective?
Well, I'll just touch on what I think the biggest thing for the Cardinals were, and this was telling. And you're right. You come out and you have some jitters in the first whatever, quarter and a half or whatever, but you're professional athletes, you're professional coaching staff, And you sit there, and I thought what was really telling was still 21-0. His defense had gotten a couple of stops in bad field position. And then right before the half, at 3rd and 5, the Rams had it in no field goal range. And Kingsbury, with almost right after the 2-minute warning, didn't even trust his defense or offense, either side of the ball, enough to take one timeout. He never even called the timeout on 3rd and 5 to force possibly another incomplete pass, because they had gotten him stopped a couple of times after 21-0, to even say, hey, Kyler, fire him up. I know it's been bad so far, but we're going to come down. We're going to go get 7 right before the half because they get the ball. Now let's go do this. And he just let the Rams run that play clock down to whatever, get it to 4th down, didn't take another timeout, let that play clock run. They punted it, and then he just sat on 3 timeouts going into the half down 21-0 when the opponent was going to get the ball. And at that point, if you're going to sit there and go, hey, look, right there, he conceded the game to me. He's basically said, we don't want to get beat 48-0. We'd rather get beat, what was the final? 34-11. That's what he basically said in that whole possession right then and there. He said, my defense and my offense is no match tonight, so let's not even try to make it one. And if I'm the GM, if I'm ownership, I'm going, wow. Wow, it's bad enough that all we had to do was beat the Seahawks to have this game at home. And now you're doing this in a playoff game on the road. So, very alarming from that standpoint. It's one thing, you take your lumps, you play bad, you just get beat by a better team, and you just go, hey, look, but man, when you just kind of went, nah, we don't want to get beat so bad. Like, what? So I thought that was bad. But as from a Rams standpoint, and this is why I like the Rams the whole week, and I said it even earlier, the more I watched Arizona and even with some of the injuries, is I think everything's just predicated. Their successes all look to have Kyler play so well, whereas the Rams can be a team. And even through their bad times and good times throughout the season, they've always done it as a team. The defense has maybe hiccuped a little bit and the offense had to bail them out, or they both lost together as a team playing just not up to par, but then one picks up the other. And I just felt like the Rams defined that last night, and then everybody kind of just had a really good game and it snowballed. But as a team, Cup was able to sacrifice early and be the decoy and be the upfield blocker to spring Odell open and then really cause havoc with the playbook. And the Cardinals didn't know what was coming or going, and Akers running the ball and the defense being so sound. And, they were able to show Kyler a lot of different looks defensively early. And that's, he may have just been like, I don't even know if I can run the ball out of this form. I don't know what I'm seeing right now, right? From one play to the other, and then handing off to Connor and seeing how they defend that. And then on a 3rd down, seeing how they defend that. So kudos to McVay. I thought McVay was going to be the guy that was more ready with the experience. And, that was a great performance. I went on Twitter before the game and I go, I just see a big performance from Stafford and a big performance from the D coming out tonight. And the Rams, I've always felt like, don't count them out. As much as they can shoot themselves in the foot, don't count them out. If they can string a few good weeks together, they're going to be a tough out.
I was just about to blast you on that, but I'm not going to do that, because here's what you said. There's some truth in what you said. At this time of the season, anyone can put a couple of good weeks. The Titans can put a couple of good weeks together and sure, win the Super Bowl, because that's the nature of this tournament.
Especially this particular season, we've watched.
This one in particular. Because if you look at it from if you kind of back out of it and you look at it from a wide angle lens, as they say, the 50,000 seat view, Josh Allen is a young guy in the playoffs. Bengals quarterback, Joe Burrow, young quarterback. The Titans, I don't know what you want to call it, Tannehill. Patrick Mahomes.
In between guy. I mean, he's still got years in him.
There's a lot of young faces coming out now and leading the charge on the AFC side. On the NFC side, it's just a bunch of old dudes doing what they do. So
right.
I honestly think that you can get a Super Bowl of Titans 49ers or Packers Bengals. Because the way the way that this year has gone, a couple of good weeks can get you into the history books. So when I'm looking at the Rams' perspective of what we've been talking about, if I'm a Rams fan, I love what happened. I'm not writing home about that. I love what happened. I'm not going to fly my Rams flag full staff today. Half staff. I'm excited, but I'm not ready to start telling everybody we're going to the Super Bowl. Because, I thought the performance from the Cardinals really could create a false sense of security for the Rams, who will have to play better against Tampa Bay. You will have to have your pass rushers play their best game of the year, because that's the only way to beat Tom Brady. You can't sit in the zone. You have to get out of him. You have to get after him, and you have to get after him up the middle of the field. You have to take away his best receiver, that being Mike Evans. If we're talking about wideouts, Jalen Ramsey can do that. So last night's game, although it was a blowout and it wasn't as close as it looked and it didn't even look close, going forward, the Rams getting hot, what does that look like? Because if the Rams are going to get hot, I think running the ball and putting Matt Stafford on that Jared Goff plan like they did last night. They didn't allow Matthew Stafford to kind of take the game over. They didn't allow Matthew Stafford to take this Patrick Mahomes approach to our best game, our running game is a 3-yard pass. Like, they didn't do that. They handed that Joan off more than 30 times, and I thought that was actually pretty smart, judging by how the Cardinals were tackling.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to have to do. I think you're right. Opponent-wise, the Cardinals are not the Buccaneers. That's right. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that they did lay the blueprint. It's the same game they've got to play to beat Tampa Bay.
Yes.
And that is keep Brady off the field by running the ball with Akers the way they ran it and the way Cam was able to run it, and then also be a little bit of a receiving weapon out on the edge there a little bit, and know that you had to mind him in short passing situations with all the other guys flying all over the field you had to defend. And they're going to have to do that. And I agree with you. If they can limit Stafford's attempts to just great play action stuff, because they're getting the run game going, and stuff that decoys Cooper maybe a little bit and opens up Jefferson and opens up Odell. Higbee had a big game. Higbee's gonna have to have some vital catches next week. And I think the big part is getting after the quarterback, right? They were able to get after a fleet-footed Kyler Murray quickly and often. And I think the key's gonna be, does Von Miller, I think Von Miller has to be the player of the game next week, because on every snap, he's got to be either ready to get Brady, ready to stop the run, chuck Gronkowski and chip him a little bit to slow him down off the edge when there's times that there's matchups with him picking him up. Because, Brady will always go to that safety net no matter how good the Rams are playing defensively throughout the game. But on the other side of the coin, the Buccaneers also didn't play. They played a lesser of an opponent, maybe a false sense of security as well. They're playing, and with the speed that L.A. looked like they had yesterday in the secondary, not just Ramsey. I mean, everybody played really high and amped up, and they were hitting guys. They were jarring balls loose. They were all over coverage. And if they can get that recipe, it's going to be a really good football game.
I talked about Cliff Kingsbury and decisions needing to be made on him. The Raiders have made a decision on Mike Mayock. And, I don't know what to make of this for many reasons. One, he did some terrible draft picks, but he also did some late round scores, like the tight end. He's drafted solid players. Jacobs, the running back, he's drafted solid players. The question that
committed to Carr, who's got him to the playoffs, right?
Decided to allow Rich Bisaccia to be the head coach. He had his pick of whomever. He chose Rich Bisaccia. I guess I'm in the woods when it comes to, if you fired Mike Mayock, is Bisaccia next? Because the feel-good story of Derek Carr leading them from a face of the franchise standpoint, Bisaccia leading them from a head coaching standpoint, Does Mike Mayock not get any credit as a general manager for helping lead this team to the playoffs? Is like, what's that worth? So, I mean, I know we're trying to make logic out of something that happened on the Raiders, but nevertheless, I'm asking the question of, is this a sign that Passaccia is out of there? Is this a sign that Carr's out of there? Is this the beginning of a house cleaning? Because I honestly can't tell you, did they have cause to fire Mike May? Of course they did. Again, he hired John Gruden. John Gruden was fired because of these emails. He drafted Henry Ruggs. Henry Ruggs obviously did what he did. So there is reason to second guess his choices. But if you're going to second guess his choices, but you're not going to put the same pressure on Passaccia, you're not going to put the same pressure on Carr, these guys get a pass while Mayock's a sacrificial lamb. I don't know about this firing, Jason. What about you?
Yeah, it's a back. You say there's cause, right? And I guess there's always cause,
right.
Right? But it's backwards cause. It's a reverse cause because the trend says I'm 25-24. I've only been the GM 3 years or
right.
president, whatever I am. 3 years. I'm 25-24. This year being the best of those years to get me over 500, to get me into the playoffs in a division where I had to outlast the Chargers, who was everybody's darling early in the season. They thought they were going to go in a division where the Kansas City Chiefs has been the best AFC team for the last half a decade.
A guy who they're calling the greatest quarterback
against,
ever.
I've got in a division where I had to put a interim coach in because of all the mess. I got two guys going up for, attempted murder or whatever else it is. In a division where Andy Reid's a head coach. In a division where, this is backwards. The cause doesn't make sense to the timeline if you're going to say a fight. So I said a couple of weeks ago when Harbaugh rumors came out, we talked and Raiders were on the right. And I said, well, look, the only way, in my opinion, Harbaugh can come to the Raiders, Mayock's got to go. And you even agreed with me. We talked about it.
Yes.
I go, there is no way Harbaugh comes to Vegas without Mayock having to go. So if that's the potential cause, and maybe Mark Davis is trying to work a backroom deal with Harbaugh to say, hey, can we keep Passaccia? I know it might be a little like, is there somewhere he can be in this franchise? And what else do we think? And maybe it's a longer talk about what you just said. Is Passaccia next? Is Carr next? What are their futures with the next head coach per se and the next GM, president of football operations? So this is interesting because there's more steps on this timeline to have to follow to figure out why Mayock is gone and what the reasons are for the next moves.
So, I mean, I don't really understand the logic behind it. I guess I will have to wait for unless the Raiders already know the general manager that they want to replace him. Unless they've spoken to that general manager and he already knows the coach that he wants. Unless those and those two people in concert know they don't want Derek Carr. I don't know. Or David, whichever one he is. I don't
Pete
know.
Carroll.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll comes and brings Russell Wilson to Vegas.
I don't know. Like they already.
I mean, I'm just saying. You could actually speculate on a whole lot of things. It's horrible. Well, hey, wait a minute. Maybe Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have had dinner since the end of the season. He goes, hey, man, I talked to Mark Davis. He's ready to make a deal. Seattle will take the car and the picks. Let's go over to Las Vegas and make some noise together. He's going to make me president. I got a 5-year deal. Let's go wipe out the rest of your prime and the rest of the years I have left. I'm just saying, there's a lot of fun things you can talk about here.
But the understanding would have to be, buckle up, that Mark Davis is smart enough to have done all that. And I don't know if he is. I think Mark Davis is listening to somebody, and that somebody told him, since Gruden's gone, you probably need to get rid of Mayock because they were one and the same. And if you bring in somebody else who's not like John Gruden, Mayock may not get along with this person.
Yeah.
So I think this was when Gruden was out, this is the only explanation for it to me, because like we stated before, it doesn't really, none of it adds up. So
it's the most realistic and simplistically realistic explanation. And I would say, yes, you're probably right. There's probably been a, you know, who knows if it's the same or some multiple advisors in Mark Davis's ear from the time he's had to take Oakland and bring the move to Las Vegas. And I'm sure there's, who knows, it could be the mob. But in Las Vegas, right? It could be the Gambino family telling him who's who and where's what and where this is going. But yeah, I mean, it could be that. It could be something much more complicated that we could speculate from Harbaugh to Pete Carroll to anything else that you might think of. And it can be as simplistic and realistic as something to that effect of, hey, look, I've got to clean all that house out.
Right.
And maybe I'm just going to be the one to say, I'll bring in this GM to GM and tell this GM, at least in your first year, you're dealing with Passaccia in year one. And that could be something, right? As simple as that, because maybe Mark Davis is going, you know, my advisement is to be loyal to the guy that got us to the playoffs. He's a fan favorite right now in town. And, you
and
know,
we're a fan favorite on the Mighty 1090 ESPN, yeah. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to your favorite podcast of your two favorite hosts, John Browner and, of course, Jason Lawhead. Globally known comedian. I'm just going to start going with that. Globally known comedian Jason Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090. If you missed anything on the show, head on over to the iTunes podcast store. Download, like, and subscribe to the Kaplan and Crew page. Also do the same thing on YouTube. Like, subscribe, share. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Shout out. Listen, we talked about a lot of football in the first half of the podcast, and because it's the playoffs, we haven't really had a chance to catch everybody up on what's been going on with the Lakers and the Clippers and more of the other things of basketball knowledge that we like to share as part of kind of like our specialty of what we do. Let's talk about somebody who got booed last night. Who the hell am I talking about? I'm talking about Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Look, man, the Clippers have really been a non-story. Paul George, who apparently just no one likes. Why? I can't really put my finger on it. He must be a horrible person once you get to know him. And Kawhi Leonard, who no one really knows because he doesn't talk. So these two dudes get booed at the Rams game, probably mostly because they play for the Clippers and it's a Laker town. If I'm those two dudes, I wanted to, quote unquote, come home and play. Does getting booed really affect me if I'm them?
No, I think that these guys are veterans. I think that these guys have played enough basketball in enough cities for multiple organizations in their career. And I really know that they probably already came to LA with the sense of this is a Lakers town. And it's always going to be a Lakers town unless the Clippers win a title. I mean, let's
but if you're Kawhi on the Toronto Raptors, you go to a Maple Leafs game, they're cheering you. You go to a Blue Jays game, they're cheering you. If you're Paul George and you go to a Colts game, they're cheering you.
Because there isn't another team that has 16 titles in town. And there isn't another team that had a Magic Johnson and a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and a Shaquille O'Neal and a Kobe Bryant and a Wilt Chamberlain and a Jerry West and a Pat Riley and a Phil Jackson. I mean, that's why. And I totally understand, like, you know, maybe if they go to a USC women's volleyball game, they'll get a round of applause if they put them on the big screen. But it's just the way it is. And I think that these guys understand that. And I think that, you know, do they love it? Probably not. Do they let it bother them? No, because I think that they just understand, you know, what they've gotten themselves into. Maybe if they were a younger star 2-3 years in, a LaMelo Ball or a, you know, a Zach LaVine or somebody coming a little more, you know, kind of deer in the woods, wide-eyed open, that it would maybe affect them, especially going into a place like this. You want to be applauded, but
right. It's
LA, and they know LA. Like, I just, you know, as an entertainer, these guys are entertainers, right? It's an entertainment town. There's comedians, there's actors, there's singers, there's rappers, there's all kinds of entertainers, and these people get all kinds of hate, and what have you done for me lately, and are you cool right now? And until the Clippers win a title, oh, believe me, if they win a title, if they're the team out of LA that wins the next title, they'll be the coolest team in town. I mean, there'll be diehard Laker fans that are still going to crap on them. But you know what? With the people that tune in to what's on TV lately, they will be cool and they'll be applauded all over town.
As much as I want to believe that, I think some things will just always be what they are. Because I think the Laker fan that is bred into people. And you're not detaching from that. You're just not. You're just not going to be able to do that. And so can you have one kid grow up in a household of four who they're all Laker fans and that one kid go, yeah, I'm going to cheer for the Clippers.
Yeah,
you're going to have one of those. But you need about 10 of those on a block for them to really start making a dent. And I think a championship would help, but not enough that you really, really start noticing the difference. Speaking of noticing the difference, Kyrie Irving's back.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he's going to have to answer vaccine questions. So I'm going to have to comment on his vaccine questions. We'll get to the Lakers and Jazz game. Trust me, we will. Whether or not Kyrie Irving gets the vaccine, I don't care. It is time for the Nets organization to tell all their pool reporters, if you ask him about a vaccine, we will not allow you to ask a question for the rest of the year. Because he said what he said. He's standing on it. Stop asking him. It doesn't matter if Kevin Durant gets hurt or James Harden gets hurt or they both get hurt and it'll just be him. It doesn't matter if they get to the finals and say they play, I don't know, the Warriors, and he can't go to Brooklyn and he can't go to Golden State. So he basically won't play in the finals. He's still not going to get the shot. He's not. So let's move on. Let's stop talking about this. Has he been productive? Yeah, to my utter shock, he's been pretty good for a guy who hadn't played. So is this a story? Yes, it's a story in the sense of I hope it is no longer a story after this.
Oh, it's always going to be a story as long as the media breathes a breath. I mean, that's true, the one though. Thing. You know, it always will be. To me, it's not anymore, right? Like, he's chosen his weapon, so to speak, and he knows he can play on the road in certain places and he can't play at home. And until other, you know, mandates, whatever, are lifted, that's the way it is. I think they've got a bigger problem with Kevin Durant out for a stretch and then having to deal with that and playing as a team and improving as a team. With that, you know, I think yesterday, my Cavs, that was a great indicator of, you know, a good team that also has some men down. Let's not act like, oh, well, then that's had Durant. Right. Well, they still had a lot of arsenal there. You know, Kyrie played 38 minutes. Harden played 40. Patty Mills has given a lot of contribution. LaMarcus Aldridge, they've still got guys in place. And that's the type of team where as long as KD's not the one that's hurt out of any of those combinations, I feel like they're okay. Yes. But when KD's the guy that's hurt out of any of those combinations, then they've got an evident weak link there. And, you know, they still have talent. They can still play well together. But, you know, a tough, young, consistent Cavs team was not going to be denied yesterday. And I thought that was kind of a big, you know, middle of the pack, Eastern Conference playoff team, playing really well, been consistent all year, play good defense. They play well against the above 500s. Showed the Nets yesterday, who went after a win, even without KD, that life isn't going to be really easy against good teams without KD.
I mean, even in that, though, I think a lot of people are shocked by what the Cavs have been able to do. And I was one of those main people the Cavs signed Lauri Markkanen and then they drafted Evan Mobley. I was like, what the hell are they doing? But Jared Allen is so mobile. Evan Mobley is so mobile. And Markkanen starts, but he didn't really play starter minutes. So it's pretty much worked out. I don't know what they're going to do at the trade deadline, but I think that's a real team. I think watching them play against Brooklyn, regardless of the mixture of the three, but you're 100% correct. It's different when Kevin Durant and then fill in one of the other two. When it's the other two minus Kevin Durant, that team looks very average. They look like a good team. They like a playoff team. Like they don't look like a championship team.
Like a good team. Like you would still say, like, listen, if Kevin Durant didn't exist in our world, right? If he didn't even live and never was a being, you would look at that Nets team and go, man, these guys are loaded. I mean, they got Kyrie. Right. They got Harden. They got Patty Mills, Aldridge coming off the bench. You know, you'd sit there and you would give them a high grade as a team that they put out there yesterday. So, it's a big difference when Durant's the guy that's down. And you saw that last year in the playoffs. He almost carried them to the finals. If he only wore a size 15 shoe instead of a 17 shoe. Yeah. You know what I mean? They would have been clearly in the finals and without Harden and Kyrie at all. So, or at least Harden hobbling and playing overweight. I mean, he wasn't playing effectively when he was overweight. He's still overweight, but he was like, you know, he was like gravy overweight last year in the playoffs, you know.
So the Lakers finally, I don't even want to say appear like they got it together last night. The Lakers finally won a game. The Lakers won a game against a team that a lot of people project to be a playoff team, and that being the Utah Jazz. Russell Westbrook had a monster dunk over Rudy Gobert. I don't want to play because I don't want to get taken down. But if that's the way that the Lakers are going to play, like, that's their only chance of winning with Russell Westbrook being your main feature and just kind of getting LeBron to the fourth quarter and letting him win the game. What did you think? Were you surprised that the Lakers were able to beat a good team?
Well, no. I mean, they should be able to beat some good teams at home every once in a while. You know, it's the first over 500 they've beaten in a month. And so they've got to be able to do that. And they've got to be able to, you know, have good fourth quarters at home, which they consistently haven't had a good fourth quarter against a good team in a long time. And so that was important. Now, you know, Utah's in a bit of a funk. They've lost four of their last 10 after, you know, having one of the best records in the NBA for most of the season leading up to the last week or so. And, you know, they just shot so poorly. I mean, you got a team that's going to shoot 35% from the field and 25% from three. You better win that game. And I feel like the Lakers were a little bit just more fortunate to get that win than they were as they were deserving. I mean, Stanley Johnson really, at one point when the Lakers started slipping and got down 10 and they had a bad third quarter, for a while there, it looked like Stanley Johnson was the only guy that cared. It almost looked like Stanley Johnson, because I was flipping after the Cardinals-Rams game was kind of over. I was mostly watching a lot of that second half of the Lakers stuff going back and forth, and Stanley Johnson really was the guy that picked that team up. I mean, he really was the ingredient that got Westbrook back off the bench. I mean, Westbrook was still, I think, a minus 10 last night with his minutes on the floor. So he was able to still pick up, you know, when Westbrook had his chance to get back on the floor in the fourth quarter, you know, he had more vigor because I think guys were following, ironically, Stanley Johnson's lead as a guy that said, hey, I'm going to do whatever I can for us to win. We've got LeBron, who is just LeBron all the time.
Right.
So how about a few of you other guys wake the F up and let's start getting some stops and get after the basketball. I mean, Stanley Johnson was going, you know, after 50-50 balls, he was getting rebounds, he was scoring, he was driving to the hole. And that was the first time I think that the Lakers outscored anybody with any decency in the paint in a long time. And because they were attacking the basket, guys like Stanley Johnson were just saying, Taylor Horton Tucker at times were just saying, we're going to go to the hole and get buckets. And then you got LeBron and you got him in there scoring in the paint. That's going to be the recipe. Holding teams under 100 and being a team that can hang with other teams and scoring in points in the paint. And Vogel said it last night. This team is the only way that team's going to be good. And I've been saying it all year. People talking about their offense and who isn't producing Westbrook turn. It's their defense. I mean, that team is right now far away from being the kind of defensive team. Last night might've been a stepping stone, but we'll see if they can go out on the road on these road trips that are coming up and play that kind of defense, especially in the fourth quarter, because they just haven't all year.
I think you're going to have a really difficult job or time right now reading what's going to happen to the Lakers. You just really are. I don't really know any person that's had a real understanding for what they're doing and what that's going to look like. So I hope the Lakers can get it together, because the league is better when LeBron James is really on the forefront, because he's more of a lightning rod than anything now at this point in his career. So I don't know, because now there was a report in The Athletic about them firing Frank Vogel.
It's too late for that. I mean, if they do that, they might as well pack in the season, because it's too late for that. They've got to let these guys all try to work it out together and let the chips fall where they may, man. Because I'm going to tell you, this is the game where they have to. The Lakers all year have been two steps forward, three steps back all year. And if this isn't the start of three steps forward, a step back, three step forward, a step back. Like, that's where they've got to shift their kind of, you know, identity as being a three-step forward, maybe a step back every once in a while. You're going to lose basketball games. That's the way it is. But all year long, they've been a two-step forward, three-step back team, every 2-3, every 2-3. So that's – and getting a new coach, I mean, I don't know who you're going to get that's going to just wave a magic wand and get these guys playing that way.
In the middle of the season, because I don't know where these reports come from, so I don't want to disparage anybody's hard work, but the Lakers are 22-22. Who are you going to bring in that's going to make them not be roughly last in almost all defensive categories, last in almost all offensive categories? Like, they're not good at, and they're not good on the road. They're not good within a division, and they're not good within the conference.
Or against over 500s.
They're giving up more. They're giving up 112 points. They're scoring 111 points. Like, their point differential is 1.4. So there's so much wrong with this team, and the idea that you're going to fire Frank Vogel, which this takes me back to what the Raiders did. If it's Frank Vogel's fault, it's also the GM's fault. It's also Rob Pelinka's fault, because he put these players together with zero input from Frank Vogel. So
What you think Frank Vogel wants Trevor Ariza starting?
Like, that's all he's got, because this is what
he's
given.
That's what I'm saying.
So it blows my mind that someone would write that article without writing the fire the general manager as well article, because he's the one who created this mess. Rob Pelinka created this mess. I've never been a fan of Rob Pelinka ever since what happened with Magic Johnson. If Magic Johnson wanted to be on the, if he still wanted to be a part of the Lakers, he would. Magic Johnson is so rich and so famous and loves to tweet so much. He's like, hey, well, I don't want the job. Y'all, cool. Let him do whatever. Cool. I don't care. I'm out. I'll always be a Laker. His stay is temporary. Mine is permanent. I got a statue outside. I don't know if you know.
Exactly. I got a jersey hanging in the rafters and a statue outside.
So give him the job, sink or swim. But this idea that, I'm not saying Rob Pelinka doesn't get any of the blame, but this idea that you're going to look at the coach and then throw the coach off the boat without throwing the general manager off the boat first, because he's the one who got him, and LeBron are the ones who got all these. They could have had DeMar DeRozan. They could have traded for Buddy Hield. There were like three guys who said, oh, man, I thought I was going to the Lakers. But for whatever reason, at the last minute, it didn't work out. There were like three or four guys who would have been a much better fit for this roster that they don't have, because they wanted to get Russell Westbrook. So I don't know. Firing Frank Vogel seems like the worst cop-out of all cop-outs. And so somebody put that story out there, though. Somebody in the Lakers front office made that known to people at the Athletic, and I think they did Frank Vogel a huge disservice.
Well, yeah, and it could be just a throw this story out so it covers me, Pelinka, or ownership, Genie, or whoever else. Cover me. I need some cover for going into the All-Star break until we get AD back. Make some other stuff up so we don't have to answer any questions from what we've done over here. And I mean, I just think it'd be foolish. I think, you know, it's too late now. I mean, if you wanted to look at this team in early December and go, hey, man, let's just go, you know, hatchet him and let's go get this guy right now. Let's try to just, you know, flip this whole thing. That's one thing early in the season, but 44 games in, you're a moron to do it.
So we were hoping that the playoffs would be exciting, and it turned out we got really one good game, and that would be the Cowboy game. The Cowboy 49ers.
Raiders Bengals was a good game. We had two good games. Two like at least games that you could watch in the fourth quarter.
I mean, I didn't think that Raider Bengal game was entertaining. I kind of felt like the Bengals offense couldn't get kickstarted for some reason, and when it did, it was pretty much over. I don't think the Bengals had anything to do, the Raiders defense had much to do with that.
Right.
I think that was one of those games where we saw the same thing from Joe Burrow and that offense that we saw from the Cardinals last night. A young team, young head coach, young quarterback, nervous in their first quarter, in their first quarter and a half, quite possibly the whole first half. But they shuck it off because their opponent wasn't as good as the Rams was.
Sure. And so Kyler, they were at home and not on the road. Right.
Kyler Murray couldn't recover from such a terrible game plan and such a terrible performance by him as well.
And the Cardinals were playing bad football going in. They had lost four or five going in, and three of those were non-playoff teams. I mean, they gave away their division on a game that they just could have beat the Seahawks after, you know, and then see the Rams lose. But
we are in a we're in a tomorrow show. Let's preview tomorrow's show, because I think tomorrow's show, we got about a minute. I think tomorrow's show is going to be very interesting, because you have the 49ers playing the Packers. You have the Rams playing the Bucks. Those two games alone, sign me up.
Those are really attractive.
Sign me up. The Bengals-Titans, you can miss me with that. Chiefs-Bills, sign me up. So I call it the Costco
Bengals
game.
Sitting pretty, you know? They got the Titans. They let the Bills and the Chiefs, you know, hit, knock each other out, slug it out. One of those get eliminated. Bengals are sitting kind of pretty. As far as if you're a road team going through it, you want to be the Bengals right now.
I call that the Costco game. That's the game I'm going to the store on. that Bengals Titans game is the Costco game.
That's funny.
That's the grocery store game. That's the game that's I'm gonna go do whatever I need to do before I need to actually pay attention to the game. So I got no interest in that. But the other three, sign me up. I'm ready to go. I'm absolutely ready to go. We'll be ready to go tomorrow. We're coming back tomorrow. We're gonna give you guys numbers. When I say numbers, we're gonna give you scores. We're gonna pick these games, okay? We're gonna spend a good 10 minutes on each game, because we're down to that point in the season when we can do that. Again, I won't go to Costco during the show, but I'm going to give you a fair warning. I'm not going to be watching too much Bengals Titans. But until then, I'm John Browner. That's Jason Lawhead. Jason.
Peace.
Yeah, yeah. Bye.
Peace.